From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last night in two Rochester restaurants. One, a higher-end facility, pays servers $7.50 an hour, the state minimum. But those workers earn a lot more in tips, some taking home around a total of around $30 an hour. In the other restaurant, servers are also paid the state minimum, $7.50. But this is a diner, and times are tougher, and business is slower. And some nights, employees take home a total of maybe less than the state minimum wage of $9.70. And that's counting tips. Well, how often does that second scenario actually happen? Governor Andrew Cuomo is concerned the answer is more than we think, and he's directed the Labor Commission to hold public hearings on eliminating the tip credit. It could end the practice of tipping in New York State. Now, the governor says it's not just about restaurant workers, and it's not just about the scenario in that diner we talked about either. He says the tip credit hurts women and workers of color specifically. But across the state, a wave of pushback has come from various sectors, most strongly from restaurant workers. This hour, a conversation about the future of New York, with or without tips, what this proposal means. Now, we have some sound you're going to hear of the governor rolling out this proposal as he did last month. So you're going to hear the governor in his own words. Producer Megan Mack and I reached out to a number of people in different industries where tipping happens, and we had no expectation of what we would find. What we found was almost universal opposition to this proposal from the governor. And you're going to hear from people this hour about why that is, but again, we'll also try to represent all perspectives as we go throughout the hour. Art Rogers is here. He's a James Beard nominated chef and owner of Lento in Rochester. Art, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Christina DiPilato is a server at Rocco, a restaurant in Rochester. Christina, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
And Samantha Pompelli is general manager of a local tavern. Did I do it right on the first time?
You did. Thank you.
Samantha Pompelli, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here. Let me just go around the table, first of all, and get your reactions after we at least lay out what the governor wants to do. What the governor's talking about is eliminating the tip credit, the credit being, you know, tipped food service workers earn $7.50 per hour across New York before tips, while other tip service employees, some hotel workers, car wash employees, they might earn $8.10 per hour before tips upstate, $8.35 an hour for them is a minimum in Westchester. And the current minimum hourly wage in New York City, or in New York State, is $9.70 an hour. So there's a gap there. And what the governor says is we can't do that gap anymore. That the minimum wage has to be the minimum wage. And Samantha Pompelli, your thoughts on that, first of all. Go ahead.
I am against eliminating the tip credit for multiple reasons, some having to do with the wage that you're able to take home and some having to do with the dynamics of the overall service industry.
Okay, and we'll talk more about why that is. Your thoughts, Christina?
I am also against it. I think it's extremely unnecessary. I've been working in this business for 20 years, and I'm certainly not there for my wages. I'm there for the cash that I'm, or, you know, credit card tips that I make from my customers because of the level of service that I give them. And I do think that if we do make minimum wage and therefore tipping will eventually decrease or even be eliminated, then I think that for a lot of servers, the care and level of service that they give to their customers will decline.
Okay. Art Rogers.
I'm also opposed to this. As an owner, a little different perspective, it would be a huge financial burden for me. Still recovering from the last unnecessary wage the governor gave tipped employees. And my service at Lento would suffer. I would have to figure out how to eliminate service essentially, and I would lose all my good people who would go find a restaurant that can afford to pay them that hourly wage on top of tips, which I don't think I could absorb that.
Okay, so what the governor might say, Art, and in a second we'll listen to the governor's remarks directly, but I think what he might say to that is, look, at Lento, you pay your tip service workers $7.50 an hour, right? And
right.
They make tips, and at Lento on a good night, they might end up making what per hour, you think?
On a really good night, $30, $35, I say an average like $25 an hour, which is, I think, a pretty great wage.
Okay. And so the governor might say, well, We're asking you to go from $7.50 to the state minimum, which is $9.70, $2.20 more per hour per worker, but you can raise menu prices. You can cover that in a lot of different ways. Simply eliminating service the way you're talking about isn't a necessity, that there's other creative solutions you could have. What would you say to that?
It would be tricky. There are creative solutions to do that. Sorry, I've lost my train of thought there.
Do you think your customers are going to absorb that cost?
Oh, right. No, they will not stand for raising prices. The restaurant market is hard. Our margins are so tight. That is not an option for Lento to just keep raising prices to keep up with this. I think that people will look at the menu, look at the prices, and choose to go elsewhere. I do believe that. I mean, it's got to end somewhere, you know. You can't have these sky-high prices. And other restaurants have gotten rid of tipping, have done that in the Bay Area and Danny Meyer's in New York City. And people, their business plummeted because people were sticker shocked by these humongous prices, even when made fully aware that, you know, it was, the tip was included in the price of the food. It just doesn't make sense in the restaurant culture of America. Tipping is so ingrained in how we go out to eat. I think at this point it would have to be a complete shift to no tipping, I think, like countrywide, all 50 states. And even that would probably take a long time.
All right. So what Art is talking about, by the way, we're going to get to that in a second, because Danny Meyer's restaurant empire in New York City especially rolled this out. And Danny Meyer is the guy behind Milino, North End Grill, Union Square Cafe, Gramercy Tavern, among others. And in a moment, I'll read about how that has, I'll tell you the story of how that's gone for him. Art is indicating it hasn't gone well, ending tipping and raising menu prices and trying to pay everyone in the building equitably. It has not gone well. It's true. He's had a lot of turnover. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Art is also talking about going away from tipping entirely. And maybe the governor would say, look, we're not eliminating tipping entirely, even if some places would decide, well, we need a new model, because if we've got to pay everyone $9.70 an hour, Christina DiPilato is a server at Rocco, the governor might say, okay, but we're not eliminating the possibility of tipping here. What would Rocco do if you had to pay everyone $9.70 an hour?
I know it would, just as Art mentioned, and I discussed this with the owner of Rocco before I came here, you know, he doesn't like the fact that as a restaurant owner, he's having the choice taken away from him as to who to give a raise to. You know, even this last raise has still been difficult for him to bounce back from. And, you know, a lot of the guys in the kitchen, they're there for much longer hours than we are. They work very, very hard, and they don't make nearly as much money as we do. And if it were his choice, he would rather give them a raise rather than give us a raise, which, you know, I don't disagree with. I've make very good money there. I'm, you know, sure, making a couple extra dollars an hour in my wage is not a bad thing for me, but for the restaurant as a whole, I just don't think it's necessary. I do think that people that work in the kitchen deserve to make more money for the work that they do. And, you know, I'm against it. I don't think it's necessary.
Samantha Pompelli, what would happen at the local tavern that you manage if this goes into effect?
I think the first thing that comes with the raises, whether it being minimum wage increasing on the first of the year every year for these next couple of years, it always comes down to those menu prices get risen. That's the first creative idea that restaurant workers and owners and managers come up with. If you have to compensate more for your staff, then your prices get raised. And it does have to come to an end at some point. Those prices can only raise so many times before your customers are consistently being shocked by the prices that you have to sell your items for. And then I think it also comes down to shorter staff in the building, whether it be back of house or front of house, which is going to change the dynamics of the restaurant as a whole, no matter what, because you have to have less staff on at specific time beings because everybody in the building is making more than what we were projected.
Well, let's listen to Governor Andrew Cuomo. This is 4 weeks ago, the governor talking about rolling out this proposal, asking the Labor Commission to hold public hearings on the possibility of eliminating the tipped service credit in New York State.
We're going to look at a peculiarity in our law, which is what's called the tip wages. Tip wages are a lower minimum wage for employees who get tips, because the theory is that tips will bring them up to the minimum wage. If the tips don't bring them up to the minimum wage, the employer is supposed to make up the difference. We did an investigation in the state. One of the tip wage workers are the car wash workers. A lot of people don't even know you're supposed to tip the car wash workers and that they need that to get to the minimum wage. 8 out of 10 car washes in New York City in the investigation, for example, there were employee violations where the employees were not making the minimum wage and the employer was not making the difference. So I'm going to start a set of hearings on that, because I don't think that's working well. It hurts immigrants. 70% of the employees are women. So that's one of the inequities that we're going to be looking at, and I'm going to be starting that now.
All right, that's Governor Andrew Cuomo, and he's talking about a number of issues related to why he wants to see this happen. And I'm going to let our guests respond to a lot of different things, from the governor's comments there to our phone calls. And Gabriel in Rochester first is on the line with us, having moved from San Francisco. Is that right, Gabriel?
That's correct. I grew up in Rochester and moved out to San Francisco to learn to cook. I've worked for the last 10 years in the restaurant industry, and I moved from San Francisco in large part because, as a prospective business owner, I found the way that the lack of a tip credit is functions in San Francisco to be an environment where I could not see making a business work. I moved back to Rochester and have found that the presence of a tip credit against the minimum wage really has a lot of positive effect. I want to just take a second to give a shout out to Art, who is my boss, and say that I think he's one of the most conscientious, generous, caring business owners that I've worked for anywhere, and sort of back up his credentials to speak to this. However, philosophically, I am very much in favor of the impetus that Governor Cuomo is working from. I think that the European system functions really well. I love dining in Europe. This quality of service is excellent. Waitstaff approach their job in a really professional way, and it's nice to not have to tip at the end of the meal. I have a lot of concern, though, about how this would potentially be implemented in New York State and how it was implemented in California. In my experience in California, people didn't know that servers were paid the full minimum wage, and they felt compelled to tip a full 20%. And it ended up with servers making ridiculous amounts of money, up to, in my experience, commonly $50 an hour, which I don't have any real fundamental complaint against. However, as somebody who has worked for my full career in the back of house, I found that it created a huge wage inequality, which however much Governor Cuomo wants to protect certain demographics from wage discrimination and tipping, I found that there was a lot of effective wage discrimination against minorities, against people with lower education levels who found it easier to get jobs in the back of house. I think that I should let somebody else talk, but I'm happy to hear more because I obviously have a lot to say about it.
But okay, well, Gabriel, thank you for that. And look, I think in some respects, what we have is a panel of folks who have their reservations from the perspective of tipped workers, like Christina DiPilato, from management, ownership. And I know we're starting to hear from people online who say, look, you've got to get the fight for 15 on this program. They have to be part of this conversation. I think that that's a fair criticism of today's program. And so I invite anyone who feels like you're on the fight for 15 side, call this program and you know, let us know what you think about tipped service workers. I think what Christina was saying earlier is that the people who need the most help in the restaurant industry tend to be the people maybe in back of house who don't always share in tips and don't see as much equity. That's why Danny Meyer, by the way, wanted to make some of the changes to New York City. And again, in a moment, I'll talk about how that's gone. But is that the point? Part of the point you were making, Christina?
Yes, for our particular, for my particular position and our particular restaurant, yes. Now, I'm very fortunate to work in a restaurant where we are a higher end restaurant, and I do make very good money in tips. Now, I understand what the governor is saying about, you know, people that work in car washes and diners and people that just don't make as many tips. And you know, for them, I can understand the tip credit working, but for someone like me, it's just unnecessary for me, and I just don't think it's necessary.
So here's a little bit of pushback from a number of different sectors. One of our listeners says, look, the state minimum wage is $9.70. If you manage or own a restaurant and you're paying $7.50, your customers are subsidizing that. That those workers, whoever they are, whether it's Christina DiPalato or someone in the back of the house or anybody else, has to make at least $9.70. Mm-hmm. And if you're not paying it, then your customers are subsidizing that. And some people have a problem with that. Art, what would you say to that?
Well, I mean, that is the solution to the problem. That if you have a car wash or something where they're not making these things, and yeah, I think the governor sort of described it there. He needs to investigate. There are avenues for employees to complain if they feel like their tips are not being dispersed properly, or the managers or owners aren't giving them out. I mean, it already is in place where they would make the minimum wage of $9.70 an hour. And serving is a skill. The best servers, they come in and they use their skills and they work for those tips, and they know they can make those large amounts of dollars per hour, $25, $30. That's, you know, like what a plumber, an electrician, like that is a good job. And I think if we get rid of tipping, it's just going to pull everybody down, not move people up or in a forward direction.
All right, so let me grab a phone call from Mohini, who wants to push back a little bit and bring some other perspective. Mohini, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. This is Mohini. I'm an organizer with Metro Justice and a former restaurant worker of 6 years, and I've been working with a lot of restaurant workers in town to organize on the One Fair Wage Bill that Cuomo is talking about. And one thing I really want to highlight is that history, data, and the impact on workers' lives is very much on the side of eliminating the tipped minimum. So one thing I think is really important to consider here is that in the 7 other states that have eliminated the tipped minimum, it's actually either increased the amount of tips that front of house servers and bartenders make, or tips have stayed the same. It's also largely been better for business because it means more of the population can afford to consume, and restaurant workers actually started going out more once they made a higher base wage that was actually livable in addition to their tips. And not only did it have a positive impact on rates of poverty in the restaurant industry, which is one of the largest sources of poverty in the country, it also cut the amount of sexual harassment that front of house workers face by half. And these are all, if you look at the 7 other states that this has actually been implemented in, the data shows, the stories of workers' lives show that this has largely been a positive thing. And as far as business goes, as much as it's been shown that actually eliminating the tipped minimum in favor of a living wage in addition to tips has actually been better for business, in the cases where that's more difficult, the Restaurant Opportunity Center actually has a sister organization called RAISE, whose sole purpose is to work with employers and restaurant owners to figure out how they can treat their workers the way they deserve to be treated, make a living wage, have decent benefits, and actually keep their business going. So there's a bunch of resources in place, and it's really a shame that restaurant owners aren't thinking harder about how they can make paying their workers a living wage work.
Mohini, can you hang with us for a while in this conversation?
Absolutely.
Okay, I want to invite you to do that, because I know there are some people who are upset, and I understand, justifiably so, that we don't have a voice in studio that's on that Fight for 15 side. But Mohini, if you'll stay there, I want you to be part of this, because I know there's a lot of disagreement out there, and I think this matters. So Mohini, why don't you stay there for now, and I want to let our panelists respond to some of what you said, and I'll kind of go around the table.
Sure.
I'll start with the general manager, Samantha Pompelli, who's general manager of a local tavern. Samantha, Mohini's making the point that, number one, this has been done elsewhere, that eliminating the tip credit has some positive outcomes, and it can be positive for everybody, including for the workers. Let's start there.
I'd like to know on changing from the $7.50 to a minimum wage being a livable wage, per se. I don't necessarily believe that that's true. I think that if we eliminated the tip credit and went to a minimum wage for restaurant workers, that I would say 95% of those people would actually be taking a huge loss on the money that they are able to make in a week. And I also don't see how restaurant workers end up in a poverty bracket, being that we are given the opportunity to make more money than and minimum wage. So how can you say that making more an hour with less in tips would actually be reversed? I think that that's kind of impossible. I don't believe that minimum wage at this point right now is a livable wage for most people, especially not people that are in the restaurant industry, being that you would probably be making 50% less, if not more than 50% less than what they're able to make at this point, being that you have the tip credit.
Mohini, you want to respond to that? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a misunderstanding and a misconception going on here where eliminating the tip credit, so to speak, and having the tipped minimum wage actually be the full minimum wage means that servers won't make tips anymore. And that's not at all the case. Actually, the One Fair Wage bill that's being proposed now, that's being pushed by restaurant workers at the Restaurant Opportunity Center, includes a tip protection clause. So what I'm saying is that workers will be able to make the base minimum wage, which I agree, like, isn't livable. We need more. But at least they should be making the base minimum wage right now in addition to their tips. And part of the reason why so many workers in restaurants are in the poverty bracket is because most of their money right now comes from relying on tips, and that is a very unreliable wage. It's dependent on the moods of customers. It's dependent on seasonal business. And when you take into account the hundreds of thousands of millions of workers that are working in corporate chain restaurants like Denny's, like Olive Garden, like Red Robin's, and Tully's, and the corporate chains, when you take the average wage of a front-of-house worker in these chains and restaurant workers overall, what you get is a base wage of about 9 or 10 an hour after tips, and that's not livable. So one thing that could really, really help restaurant workers in this case is actually making the full minimum wage instead of the tipped minimum wage to begin with, and that doesn't mean they'll lose their tips.
All right, so let me go ahead and read an email from a listener named Gabe, who says the following. He says, I'm a bartender who relies on tips to help feed my family. I do well. However, tipping has a decidedly racist past that allowed hotel and restaurant owners to pay newly freed slaves no salary and rely on tips to survive. That tradition continues. I would lose tip money, but I am good at what I do and would command a higher wage. Tipping allows weaker servers to trot along, tipped out of guilt or a sense of duty. We should have higher wages plus tips. That's from Gabe. Mohini, do you agree that that sort of history of racism, because the governor himself brought that up as one of the motivations for eliminating the tip credit. What do you think, Mohini?
Absolutely. That's actually, that is historical background that I've given to a lot of workers and at like any events that I've spoken at as well. And tipping absolutely has a racist history in this country. And the funny thing is that after the emancipation of the slaves in America is when tipping returned to the U.S. after the labor movement in the U.S. prior to that had eliminated it as a practice that was considered undemocratic. Europe did the same thing. To this day, Europe sticks to that notion, whereas the U.S. has once again accepted paying workers a sub-living and sub-minimum wage as acceptable. You know, that's still the case in the U.S., whereas like that's not the case in Europe and that's not the case in other parts of the world.
Can I ask, I want to ask Art Rogers, the owner of Lento, who's here, if you think, you know, we talked about the idea that the European model that doesn't have tipping, really. I mean, maybe you leave a euro or two here and there for something extraordinary, or if you're an American who's not used to not tipping. But for the most part, they don't have tipping. And part of what we've been seeing is, are we moving in that direction eventually? Now, Mohini, the governor, others have said, this is not eliminating tipping. This is about, you know, protecting that bottom line minimum wage and who has to pay it and not allowing customers to subsidize it. Whereas I'm hearing from some GMs, some restaurant owners, some service workers who feel like this is a step along the road to changing the tipping mm-hmm. model, if not entirely. If we could overnight, idealistically, would you like our country to go to a European model if people could kind of get their heads around it? Would that be better?
I guess so. If we had more of the type of lifestyle or government they have in Western Europe, where they have healthcare and all those other things are sort of inclusive, we don't have that here. So those are things that people in Europe don't have to worry about. You can be a server and work for the normal wage. You don't necessarily need as much money to take care of all those things that we have to take care of here in America. And I don't think, I'm sure you guys would be happy to get the wage and still get the tips. I mean, this is going to hurt me. I mean, I have to come up with this money. What she said is the studies show people still tip. I think they still will tip. I couldn't argue with that at all. But if this goes through, I would have to close or come up with a system where people get the little buzzer with the lights on it and come back to the kitchen and pick up their tray of food. Which I think coming out to a restaurant like Lento, you want that. That's part of it. Getting a really good server who offers you really good service and has knowledge about the menu and knowledge about the wine. That would be a direction I would not have a choice. I would have to eliminate my servers. And talking about Denny's and Red Robin, they're just going to replace those servers with robots or iPads. People just order it. I mean, it will... More people will lose their jobs than gain their jobs. So it's a race to the bottom for servers.
Mohini, that is one thing that we hear often, which is that we're getting mm-hmm. ready for mechanized service, ordering on tablets, fewer human interactions, fewer employed people with an increase in wages. What's the response to that?
Yeah, that's a doomsday prophecy that's often shared, and we just haven't seen it actually happen or move in that direction in any meaningful way. So like Art said, people come to restaurants and they like eating out because they like being served by human beings, because they like the human interaction, because they like the fact that there are people that care about them, that want to provide this wonderful experience for them. And that's an essential part of restaurants. So that's one reason why this race to like using technology for service so that people don't have jobs anymore is probably very, very unlikely to happen. And if we were to talk about in concrete terms, like I said, in the 7 other states that have eliminated a subminimum tipped wage and actually have higher minimum wages as well, that hasn't happened. Business has actually improved. Jobs have improved. Retention has improved. The amount that businesses lose in high employee turnover is incredibly large. And when workers are actually treated better, the cost to provide them those extra benefits and a living wage is way less than the cost of turnover. And when it comes to thinking, you know, if I do this, like as a business owner, then my business is going to shut down. Again, that hasn't shown to be true in the other states, and there are resources for this. So business owners that are concerned about that, they can go to the organization called Raise that's actually operated by Danny Myers, who's a premier, like, celebrity, like, top restaurant owner in New York City that has figured out how to make this work and is working with business owners all over the country.
Sorry to interrupt, but it hasn't worked. It's a huge disaster.
Yeah, I mean, and the reality of Danny Meyer, let me just read from multiple sources. Because here's the story on Danny Meyer's restaurant group. He believes in this very strongly. He wanted to see back-of-the-house employees paid better. He wanted to see more quality. He wanted to see customers know that when you come in, you don't have to tip, that we've raised prices, I think what Art said, 21% on the menu.
Correct.
Communicated that to customers, saying you're not going to be tipping. We've got it covered. It's going to be more equitable. And he started that in late 2015. So here are several different reviews of that. Forbes writes the following. The restaurateur acknowledged that the policy changed, first introduced in 2015, has not been easy. He says, we've learned that it takes about a year to get the math right in any restaurant in terms of all three stakeholders, the staff, the customer, and the investor. Business Insider says some of Danny Meyer's most loyal employees said they could no longer afford to live with the lower pay. After working at Union Square Cafe for more than 3 years, Daniel Carroll quit just 2 months after she stopped receiving tips. NewYorkEater.com says, apparently Danny Meyer's rollout of Union Square Hospitality Group's no-tipping policy has not been rosy. Grub Street reports that many former and current servers say their pay has gone down around 18%. Morale has dropped, leading to lots of people quitting the company. Some staffers still had positive things to say about the company. They lauded its benefits, and several still wanted the tip-free system to work. But for now, it sounds like there's been, according to NewYorkEater.com, culture shifts that have been problems, big drastic drops in pay for service staff, and lots of turnover. So you cited Danny Meyer, and all of the information I have is that it has not gone very well.
Yes, and I think now that you've cited that, like, I was aware of some of his other efforts with Raise, but the fatal flaw there is the lack of tipping, and that is not what the One Fair Wage bill is asking for.
Okay.
It is not asking for the elimination of tipping.
Okay, so in other words, right now, Mohini, you think that if we eliminate tipping, that's a problem because the culture is there's so much change there. But in other words, that's the big problem if they go that way, if individual restaurants go that way, but this bill does not call for that. Is that fair?
No, it doesn't. And when it comes to tipping, like, tipping should be something that's like that 15 or 20% that people tip on a bill, that should be something nice, something extra for good and exceptional service that workers get. But for the labor that they provide, that's the reason restaurants exist. Like, without restaurant workers, without your bartenders, you wouldn't have a restaurant. And for that essential labor that they provide, they deserve a living, full minimum wage from their employers. And whatever tips they get from customers should be something nice, something extra on top of that.
Now, according to Investor's Business Daily, Wendy's restaurant chain is increasing its number of self-service ordering kiosks because of minimum wage hikes. Wendy said that self-service ordering kiosks will be made available across its 6,000-plus restaurants in the second half of 2017, so this is earlier last year, as minimum wage hikes and a tight labor market push up wages, the report says. McDonald's and Panera have self-ordering kiosk stations, among others. So when you say it's sort of a doomsday prophecy that this is going to happen, it looks like it's happening, doesn't it?
Well, the other side of that is that it's not just about wages, it's about worker power and about unionization. So the other side of it is that we're not only asking for higher wages and better conditions, we're also organizing workers to be able to assert their own power in the workplace. And workers can come together and protect their jobs and protect their living conditions. So it's not just about 5 for 15, it's 5 for 15 and a union.
All right, so you're hearing a number of different perspectives on Governor Cuomo's proposal to have the Labor Commission take a look at the tipped service credit in this state. So again, a lot of workers who are servers in this state at restaurants get paid $7.50 an hour. But of course, the idea is they take home significantly more than that in tips. It's not just about servers in restaurants. It's about other industries as well. And the governor says it's about making sure there's true equity across the board here. So we're having a conversation, and our guests include Art Rogers, a James Beard-nominated chef and owner of Lento. Christina DiPilato is a server at Rocco. Samantha Pompelli is a general manager of a local tavern. And glad to have Mohini on the phone with us, who works with Metro Justice and has worked with groups that have pushed the fight for 15. So a lot of different perspectives. We're way late for our only break. We're going to come back to more of your phone calls right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we're talking about gun legislation, so-called concealed carry reciprocity, what that would mean for New York State. We'll also talk about bump stocks and the effort to ban them, especially post-Las Vegas. Then in our second hour, you're going to hear Governor Andrew Cuomo and his budget address laying out priorities and how to fund them for New York State. Talk with you on Tuesday. All right, welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to get some feedback from panelists who've been waiting to jump in. Let me read two quick emails as well. Very different thoughts here. One comes from Teresa in Webster. She says, "Hi, Evan. I'm a small business owner in a fairly low-margin, labor-intensive industry who pays above minimum wage and strives to pay a living wage. But why should my business have the burden of budgeting for at least minimum wage for payroll, but the tipped industries don't? How do we agree what a tipped industry is? Could I wake up tomorrow and ask my clients to start tipping so I could increase my margins? Just some thoughts. It seems unfair from more than one perspective to me." Whereas MJ writes the following and says, "Evan, when will the onslaught to small business owners in the state stop? With all these new proposed laws in the state, where are the small business owners' rights? It's like saying everyone must get a living wage, but if owners go broke, so be it. Small owners are not corporate. We are your neighbors, your relatives, and friends, just trying to make a living wage ourselves. Your guest on the phone is living in a dream world compared to small business owners' reality, and I usually vote liberal, but come on here." That's from MJ. Very different, and I want to give everyone a chance to respond to some of what they've heard there before we jump back to the phone. So Christina DiPilato, who's a local server, I know you've been hearing, kind of taking in a lot of different perspectives mm-hmm. in the conversation. Are you moved here? I mean, you're someone who makes well beyond what the state minimum wage is because your tips are really strong at a higher-end facility. Mm-hmm. Are you moved here? What do you think?
If my hourly wage does get increased to, what was it, $9.50, I don't even remember exactly what it is. Sure, that would be great for me because I'm making more money for doing the same amount of work. But if we want to talk about fairness, then no, I don't think it's necessarily fair. I don't think it's fair to business owners to have to raise their wages for their front of house workers when their front of house workers still make a decent amount of money, especially those of us that work in higher end restaurants. The comments that people have made about, you know, reducing sexual harassment, to me, I don't think the amount of money has any reflection on whether someone is going to sexually harass me or not. I don't think that will change. If somebody wants to call me honey or sweetie or make a joke, they're going to do that no matter how much money I make.
How often does that happen, by the way?
It happens. Not terribly often, but it does happen. And on top of mechanics of things, I believe I was at an airport one time, and sure, it was a fast food place, but I walked up expecting to talk to a counter server, and I was met with a whole bunch of computers where I got to go up and you know, choose exactly what I wanted, and the only human that I interacted with, I believe, was the cashier, and you don't even necessarily need that when you're working with a computer. So, you know, of course, in higher end restaurants, you are going to always be dealing with a human being. But yeah, definitely, we're going to start seeing more machines and robots, as Art commented, if business owners have to keep hiking their pay for their workers. And any restaurant owner knows that your biggest expense is going to be your payroll more than anything. And, you know, they're always trying to keep that down as much as possible. So, and I certainly don't think that raising prices is going to help in any way. I mean, if you read any of the Yelp reviews out there for any of the higher end restaurants, and you know, I certainly read all of the Yelp reviews from Rocco, people already say that our prices are too high. And if we keep raising them, I do think that people will still be coming, but they won't be happy about it.
Keith, one of our listeners, says, "Well, for the owners on your show, why don't they just reduce the portion sizes if you want to cut costs somewhere?" Art Rogers, can you bring up the wage that you have to pay your servers if this tipped credit is eliminated, but just cut portion sizes, as Keith suggests?
Yeah, I guess I could do that. I don't know if people would want that. I mean, there's a certain expectation. I mean, we're not like a type of restaurant where you're going to get dinner and then lunch and then dinner the next day all in one meal with a huge takeout bag, which a lot of Americans expect that kind of meal. I wouldn't say our portions are small. I think we work hard to make them reasonable. But that's just sort of because we want people to eat a variety of things off of our menu. So we have so many good and interesting dishes that we don't want to make anything too huge so they get too full and they can have a larger sampling of what we have to offer.
And that's much more European style, by the way. That's like the anti-Cheesecake Factory.
Right, mm-hmm. We're trying to do the opposite of that. So, yeah, people are going to eat until they're full, for the most part, I think they're going to spend the same amount of money. You know, they're going to be like, oh, maybe I will have that Caesar salad because that, you know, calamari was smaller than I thought it was going to be. Yeah, you could make the portions smaller, but I don't know if that is a silver bullet or super helpful.
All right, so I want to get back to some phone calls because we've got a lot of feedback coming in from a lot of different directions. Jeremy and Hector, thanks for listening. Jeremy, go ahead.
Yes, hello. I think we need to broaden the discussion about the mechanisms or trends for the doom and gloom of computerizing service. What's happening is we're lumping all restaurants together. When you look at the Wendy's and all these other larger chains, these are corporate businesses that have a totally different sort of growth paradigm. And these are publicly traded businesses, and they have, and you know, and they can afford to make these sort of changes or to invest and mechanize because their whole paradigm is to reduce all of their costs. In some cases, at the expense of human labor. And I think we need to understand that trend and talk about why they can get away with that, and that it's not necessarily the case that the mom and pop restaurants have the investment capability to do that, and nor is it necessarily advantageous for them.
So, Jeremy, and your connection isn't great, but I'd like to ask you a follow-up here because I think you're raising an interesting point here. And here's another report on this idea of mechanization. NBC News reporting that the burger chain Shake Shack is planning to trial a new restaurant in New York, which will not have a traditional cashier's counter. Instead, guests will use digital kiosks or their mobile phones to place and pay for orders. Their order will be processed immediately to the kitchen. The guests will receive a text message when the food is ready. Shake Shack suspects that the cost of labor will rise due to an increased minimum wage, and that given that projection, it becomes an economic necessity to consider this kind of a change. Excuse me. So Jeremy, I think what you're saying is, sure, Shake Shack is one of these big chains that can afford it.
Who are they? And what's their, you know, what is Shake Shack? You know, they have a board. Are they a larger of a larger corporate structure? I don't know.
Sure. Yes, they are.
So the process and the incentive for them to do that is driven by their investment stakeholders. You know, where they couldn't care less about the model, as long as the model gives them growth targets.
Okay, so I guess what I'm asking you is, I take the point. What I'm trying to make sure I understand from you is, what should we do about that?
A larger discussion is beyond just this particular policy decision, but a larger discussion about how to structure the service industry and what we allow the corporate model to create and to normalize that process. It needs to normalize that process at the expense of people's well-being. And you could call me philosophical, but we do need to think about that in a broader sense.
Okay, so I suspect you might agree with someone like Mike who writes to us on Twitter and says, Evan, this debate is nibbling around the edges. The lack of comprehensive free health care and subsidized or free higher education means that legalized lower pay is a problem, he says. He calls it a crime.
Right. Because we're talking about this issue in a little bit of in a vacuum, because there's all these other social economic realities of people, and you can only have so much wiggle room. Okay, and if people don't have a living wage and these services are not provided through a robust society that looks out for citizens through the public interest investing for people's well-being, then yes, you have very, very little room.
All right, Jeremy, thank you for the phone call, and I appreciate you listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS 89.5 FM. I think that brings to mind a couple of things here. First of all, I mean, Art Rogers, I don't know if you want to weigh in on the politics of it. I don't know if you consider yourself politically a progressive or if that matters in the context of this discussion. But I'm hearing from people like MJ who emailed the program to say, I may be a liberal Democrat, but I don't like this idea. Maybe what Jeremy's comment says is the tipped credit is just one portion of a larger conversation about how workers are treated, what they're paid, what minimum wage society-wide looks like? What are their healthcare benefits? And you're operating, yes, in a little bit of a vacuum, just in your little world trying to operate within that. Do you have any thoughts on sort of that push-pull? Because my guess is you want those bigger goals that are similar to what Jeremy's talking about. You're also running your small business and operating within the framework as it is, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, I agree with what he said. I mean, these big chains that are, you know, corporations, big publicly traded restaurant groups, they can afford to put robots in. Like he said, they're sitting in a boardroom, they look at their bottom line, they could care less about their people. They are going to figure out how to maximize profit. And like one of your other guests here said earlier, labor is your biggest expense in any restaurant. That's the way it'll go. We'll just have chains, like restaurants like Rocco and Lento will go away. Or gets, you know, swallowed up, and they'll be just like a bunch of other companies, three huge publicly traded restaurant groups that own every chain, which that might already exist now.
That's where we're headed.
I think so. I mean, I think that's kind of what he was saying. These decisions are made in boardrooms, they're not interacting with their workers. They don't care. And they have the money to invest in that technology. And if they see, you know, they project in 10 years, if we can get rid of all of our humans and it'll save us billions of dollars, then absolutely they're going to do that, especially if they keep raising minimum wage and things like that.
All right. So I want to go back to Mohini because I think something interesting is kind of happening here, which is from our listeners, our callers, our panelists. I think there's a lot of progressive minded people who do want the same things because we're not talking to corporate board members who are literally just looking at a board saying, what's the bottom line? What do we automate? We're talking, I mean, Art, I assume, doesn't want to automate ever, and you'd like to employ more people and feel like you're helping more families, and I think that's the case of the ownership of places like Rocco. I think mm-hmm. that's what general managers are doing on the local level. And so I think people want the same thing. The question is, realistically, how do you get there? And Mohini, you've heard a lot of sort of different viewpoints on this. You know, do you just not believe that people like Art, Christina, Samantha, that they're places of business are going to be as negatively impacted as they're telling you it will be? Or is there something else going on? What do you think?
I think it's a little bit of that. I think, you know, every restaurant is different and it requires like really looking at like the revenue that each restaurant is bringing in and what their costs are. But what I will say is that, you know, like I said before, in like the seven other states that like one fair wage is the law, like there hasn't been this takeover and domination of like corporate chain restaurants at the expense of like small fine dining restaurants. Like that hasn't happened. And I think the bottom line is that, like Jeremy said, workers across the board deserve living wages, deserve benefits with the amount of work that they're putting in to make these establishments exist. That's just the bottom line. And we need to figure out in this country how to treat our workers right.
Can I ask, Mohini, let me just follow that with one question then. If it's a values question that says we've got to put the workers first in this country, and that means workers society-wide. So whether you're serving at a high-end restaurant, whether you're serving at a diner, whether you're working for a car wash, workers have to come first. Workers too often have not come first in this country. If that means that one of the results is we don't really have local establishments like we did before, that it's all chains or owned by bigger, you know, corporations, and the little guys kind of go away, if that is a side effect, is that worth it?
Well, I think that's a very misleading question.
Okay.
Because it kind of assumes that, like, okay, like, this side effect has a huge chance of happening, so are we willing to risk that? And I think that's a very misleading question. I think what it's worth looking at is, historically speaking, every time there's been a major labor win, you've always had business, and you've always had business owners say that, like, they're going to close down. This is going to tank the economy. How are we going to do this? And whether it was winning the 8-hour workday, whether it was winning a better minimum wage now, whether it was the win that fast food workers had 2 years ago or 3 years ago now in 2015 that put them on a path for 15, every single time businesses countered saying the economy is going to tank, our businesses are going to close down, and that has not happened.
Okay.
So I think...
We're going to lose the hour here. So just some final thoughts here, Art. I mean, Mohini is saying history says you may be concerned as a business owner. The doom that you see coming with this is not going to play out.
I have my numbers on my computer. I can look at them. I know on average how many hours my servers work. And if this goes through, I just have to multiply that by the new wage. And that, you know, unless all of a sudden my business quadruples, that money's got to be made up somewhere. I think that's economics 101.
Forbes says the latest data from the Census Bureau shows that New York lost more than 500 restaurants in 2016 after years of steady increases in the number of restaurants. Broadening the metric to include all food service businesses, it shows a similar trend. New York lost more than 400 of these businesses in 2016, the first time the state had a net drop in food service in nearly two decades. And I think what Art is saying is you wish that the rosier projections could be true. You're not seeing it. You're worried about your future and staying open.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Christina, are you worried about finding work here locally as a server if this happens here?
I'm not so worried about finding work, but I do think that if the minimum wage for servers does increase, then, you know, I don't necessarily think that people will be losing jobs, but I do think that, you know, from a restaurant owner's standpoint or a general manager's standpoint, when they have to staff their floor, say instead of staffing with four servers, they'll go down to two or three, and then the sections will get larger. And no matter what size your section is, people are very demanding. And I do think that I think it's going to suffer. I do.
Okay. And Samantha Pompelli, 20 seconds, some final thoughts. Go ahead.
I just want to say thank you for having us today. And I believe that it would drastically change the dynamics of the restaurant industry if these heights continue to rise.
Hey, Mohini, I also want to say thank you for calling. Let's schedule a separate hour. We'll talk to Metro Justice, not just on tipped workers. It's sort of traditionally thought of in the restaurant industry. I know it impacts others, and I want to continue that conversation. Let's have a conversation offline, and let's come back and continue the discussion.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Mohini Sharma, I appreciate that. Our thanks to Art Rogers, Christina DiPolato, Samantha Pompelli, and we will stay on this for you. Thank you for all of the feedback. We were flooded with phone calls. Great work by our engineer, Tim. Thank you, Tim, and Rob Braden, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.